Okay, it is time now for our monthly podiatry slot. We've got Anne-Marie Horgan with us. You're very welcome, as
Thanks
always.
Thanks for having me, Deirdre.
Good to have you. Now, loads of questions for you, and they started coming in thick and fast. Funny, a lot of them are very similar to each other, so I think that there's obviously a set number of conditions you get
coming
with your
in,
feet,
yes.
but different circumstances and different people. For example, I know we've had this one before. Texter says, Deirdre, my young fella is tiptoeing at aged 8, and I notice when he runs, his legs are all over the place, and I worry for him when he gets older. At what age can he be seen by Anne-Marie?
Oh, normally from kind of 3 upwards. Once a child is kind of sturdy in their gait pattern, I would always kind of be able to intervene or have a look. So I'd definitely give it the year and a half of kind of walking before I could have a look and do an assessment on them. But tiptoeing is extremely common. But parents seem to always come in very late, as in when the kid is that little bit older. So the sooner we catch something, obviously the better. But tiptoeing at 8, there's 2 different kind of avenues that we can look at. And one, it's functional. Is there any sort of, we say, tightness or restriction or contractures going on? And then 2, you'd be surprised, a lot of kids develop this mechanism as a habit, so it becomes habitual. So when somebody's got, we say, excessively flat feet, or when they've got a midfoot drop, what they tend to do is they tend to lift up their heels because they feel better and they feel taller. So we say it's like you or I, we say, wearing a block heel, and that's very similar to tiptoeing. So when you lift up your heel, you're giving yourself arch support and you're not going flat on the ground, and you stand taller and you feel better. So then it becomes a habit, so they start doing this then kind of repeatedly over time. So they'll start, we'll say, in the morning, they'll probably be on the heels, and then as the legs then get a bit tireder, then they'll start to kind of tiptoe to kind of compensate for your mechanism. But what can we do about it? I'd always figure out why the child is tiptoeing first, and I'd always look, is there any other kind of medical aspect or medical analogy going on? And then figure that out, and then I'd kind of put the picture together, as in the timeline, and then we'd look at either putting in some sort of lift into the shoe, or we might put in, like we say, something like an orthotic device. We'd look at the footwear, we'd look at a stretching program, and then we'd look at their external kind of hobbies and activities then as well, just to get them more mobile and just put some strength back in the legs, because obviously at 8 you'd be kind of a little bit careful. But normally we'd kind of introduce kind of strength exercises. We get them up on the bike and we build up the quads and the glutes. And then once that picture then kind of builds as they get older, normally it should reside. So it's very common coming in.
So there's no problem with him coming in age 8?
No, 100% not.
Sarah is in Ardfert. She has a shoe-related question for you, Anne-Marie. It's about the Hoka trainer.
Hoka.
The Hoka trainer. She says, I saw them for sale and I was wondering, are they any good for my feet?
The Hokas are, I don't know if you remember, the MBTs. The Hokas are the same analogy as the MBTs. So it's got a rocker sole. So I always kind of say, it's a bit like the bottom of a boat and it'll roll. So the only analogy I would use for the Hokas is, in patient wise, I would put ankle fusion patients or people who have had whatever bone donor or any sort of kind of major surgery done on the hinge joint. In general, a lot of long distance runners would use it. They've got a kind of a memory cell in the back. Now, they don't last as long as they should. If somebody's very big build, they wouldn't hold body weight very well. So yes, the Hoka is good for people who have Achilles problems, but long term, what they can do is, because the shoe is kind of up at the back, it puts pressure on the forefoot. So if somebody's got some sort of weakness for a deviation of a bunion, then the Hokas long term can speed up any forefoot problems. So it can make bones drop on the front of the foot, it can make toes move, it can cause hallux valgus, which is a bunion. So if you do have an Achilles or a calf or whatever, and we'll say if you're running, or you know, some people wear them for work, there's a certain patient foot type that I would, she'd need to know her foot type. There's a certain patient foot type, so if she's no bones moving or everything seems kind of in alignment, then yes, try them.
Worth
they
it.
Are good.
Now, a Killarney caller wrote us a letter, Anne-Marie, and said, I have a question for Anne-Marie Horgan, the podiatrist. I think I might have plantar fasciitis on my left foot. It's very sore at times, like a stabbing pain near my heel, and I can't put weight on it in the mornings when I get up. Could Anne-Marie tell me, can I cure it myself, or do I need to go to her, and could she recommend a good pair of walking shoes for me, please? Now, I don't know whether this is a man or a woman, or whether how old they are, or is that even relevant? relevant.
No, no. A foot is a foot. So look, like, you must think of it this way. Plantar fasciitis, or else it could be a heel spur, or it could be, you know, something kind of similar along those lines. But they're all just different analogies, but they have the same kind of treatment outcomes. So plantar fasciitis can be quite vicious. So I have a lot of patients come in where they'd be off work and, you know, they begin steroid injections, blah, blah, blah. But normally it's mechanical. So you must think our feet are mechanical. So they roll and rock as we move, and they hold, we say, if you're 10 stone, they hold 10 stone. So that plantar fascia is holding, we'll say, that person's body weight all day, every day. So there is a huge amount of a load on it. So as we get older, our feet collapse and our feet flatten and bones move and blah, blah, blah. So when it comes to plantar fasciitis, if it's burning and it's causing pain at the heel, you can start off the very lower down at the scale. She can buy a cheap pair of insoles inside the pharmacy, 20 euros or whatever. She can try that analogy first. So all you're doing is you're propping up the foot. So I always say it's a bit like putting scaffolding under the house. And so then that scaffolding length should hold, we say, the 10 stone. So anything kind of off the shelf insoles wise are very flexible. They're a grand short term. Long term, if somebody has a higher prescription, they won't do much. But they're still better than nothing, so she has to remember that. She could go buy some strapping, and she could go onto YouTube and look at strapping videos. She should implement an exercise program, although they're all online, they're everywhere. So stretching, kind of like, you know, stretching kind of, I would always say, on the hour, every hour if you possibly can. So doing a little bit every time, so you're stretching the plantar fascia, the calf, the Achilles, and that will stop the tension on it. So then the next step up above that is, obviously, you can come into us, so we'd look at you, what's causing the plantar fascia. So 9 times out of 10, people always come in when it's affecting their lifestyle, so they come into us last. So then I would look at giving them some sort of an appliance or device, just to prop up. So if they have a midfoot collapse and the plantar fascia has got, we'll say, a kind of a low-grade tear, then obviously I would give them an orthotic device, because we need to get them back mobile. Because what happens a lot of patients is they become immobile, they start to put on weight, then it'll affect them mentally, and then the vicious circle starts, and yeah, it's going on, and it's very hard then to retract back. So exercising, I'd advise her probably do non-weight-bearing, maybe do some macro aerobics, go to the pool, go for a walk up and down the pool, introduce a bit of cycling, either at home if you have an exercise bike, or you can buy kind of a pedalier device. But like, there's all different options, but she could try the kind of DIY job, as I call them, first. Otherwise then come in. And
we actually have another question for you about plantar fasciitis. This person says, my doctor told me I might need surgery for plantar fasciitis that I've had for the last 2 years. I really don't want to go down that route, as it would just make me nervous. Would Anne-Marie recommend that I come to her?
Of course. So no, sir. Like, you must think, you've got how much body weight down on top of the feet. So if you do surgery on the plantar fascia, one, you've scar tissue. Two, I've seen patients who have surgery done. None of them have been successful. There's always been problems or red flags afterwards. So either where they've pinned, we'll say, either bones up, or they've done a kind of a lengthening tendon. You know, the plantar fascia, they've done a lengthening procedure, and it's always been kind of quite traumatic. So like, anything to do with the feet, you know, they carry us everywhere, and if you do anything surgery like that, especially when it comes to kind of bones or tendons, it is quite traumatic, and the recovery is quite long. So my kind of philosophy with that aspect is, it's rarely, it shouldn't be done, but it'll impact your lifestyle hugely. So if she hasn't been to a podiatrist, the basic answer is 100% yes. But like I said there, with the kind of DIY options, as in the self home at help options, she could try them first, but having surgery is the very, very
last resort. Dave was in touch. He says, I want to ask Anne-Marie about a bone under my arch that seems to be bulging out, and the wellies are making it a bit sore. Should I book myself in and get it looked at?
Normally, like, you've got a certain amount of bones underneath the arch, and you'll always, like, if that sounds like it's got a midfoot drop, so what happens is the bone has dropped down, and then as a result patients always lose fat, so we've natural kind of puffy fibre fat around our bones, and if something drops down, it becomes prominent on the floor. And then if you think, we'll say, this guy is whatever, 12 stone, you've 12 stone then down on top of that bone, as going bang 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 on the ground all day every day. He's in wellies, there's no support, he's hopping off tractors on concrete on uneven land, and his job is actually speeding up the bone moving. So obviously, like that, like the analogy as in putting scaffolding under the house, like wellies are a disaster. They're just rubber. You're flopping. You're not laced. So your foot is hypermobile. So it's quite loose. So, of course, bones are going to move. So the ideal of building an orthotic, and to be quite a high walled orthotic as well that I would build, to keep those bones from dropping more, that would be my aim. So it's just putting a support structure and kind of putting concrete underneath the foot just to stabilise and stop anything else moving.
Very good.
Like when it comes to wellies and stuff like that, the key to any kind of devices that I would hand out, like the first question I'd always kind of ask is, what weight are you, roughly? So if somebody's come in and they're 16 or 17 stone, I have to build a device to that quality to hold a 16, 17 stone, and that is key. So, you know, you get insoles inside in the chemist or wherever, and people come into me with kind of other types of orthotics and the quality is disastrous. So it's very low grade, so it's all to do with the kind of the materials that we use when we build a plate as or any stabilising devices.
Okay, we better take a quick break, Anne-Marie. There's lots of questions for you and we still have room for a few more. We'll try and answer as many as we can. Remember, you can call us. Padraig is taking the calls today on 0667123666. Just gone 16 minutes past 2 on Talk About on Radio Kerry. More of your foot related queries after these. Now I'm joined in studio by Anne-Marie Horgan, podiatrist from the Tralee Podiatry Clinic. She's answering questions about your feet, listeners' feet. This next one, I think, Anne-Marie, a lot of people will identify with. Texter says, could I get you to ask Anne-Marie for a solution for cold feet? I'm always colder during the winter and sometimes my feet can go white as well as my fingers. Is there anything I can buy to warm them up?
Well, look, there's different kind of conditions. You know, people are coming in with chilblains, and then there's a kind of an under, kind of a bigger condition, Raynaud's, and, you know, it's a vasospastic where, you know, our blood flushes to our peripheries, and I always say it's a bit like a tap. So when you turn on the tap, you need pressure to push water out. So it's the same with blood, you need pressure to push blood round. And, you know, as we get older, I see patients coming in and they'd lose the fat on their feet. They might have had chemo or steroids or might have rheumatoid or whatever. And, you know, so you need that. It's a duvet effect. So also kind of the quality of footwear as well is kind of disintegrating. So they're not as padded as they used to be. So it's quite flimsy material. So there's kind of aspects that I would always look at. So I'd always look at the person's health background. I would always look at their kind of, obviously, their foot and ankle, as in the aspect as in fibro fat. You need fibro fat to act like a duvet effect to hold heat. So when patients come in, and I'd always check the capillary refill as well, so I would see how quickly the blood, if I knock the blood out of a toe or anywhere around the ankle, I would check how quickly it refills. So normally kind of a healthy-ish person is about 3 to 5 seconds, the blood should fill back in. So if I just press, then I knock the blood out, it goes white, and then it fills back in. So if it stays kind of white, then normally there's kind of either, I'd look at their lifestyle, are they active, and, you know, is their house damp? Even just simple questions you'd be talking to patients. So is there anything you can do? Yes, externally, like you can look at, there is kind of heat warming insoles that you can get. So you can go for the kind of sheepskin, and then we do a kind of it's a red pore on insole that traps heat. So it holds the heat within the pores. Then we'd also, that patient, then I'd put them into kind of insulated kind of footwear like boots. Then we'd look at their socks. You can get warming creams, but they're all short term. Then we'd look at their activity. So like, are they going for a small walk or are they even walking at all? Also, the kind of exercise that you do more flushes the blood. Then I would normally kind of ask them, you know, are they taking magnesium? Are they drinking water? It's all about diluting and flushing the blood. But is there a quick fix? No, it's kind of a mixture of little factors. So also, like the old kind of cure, people used to put tinfoil into their shoes or bits of carpet. So it just holds heat. So it makes sense. It just acts like a duvet effect. But, you know, like, and then there's kind of thermal kind of socks, double layered, as in jewel skin socks that you can get. They would be kind of along the hiking lines. And then exercise.
So yeah, lots of solutions there. Lots of suggestions. Johnny is in Ballylongford. He wants to know, what's the cure for painful bunions on your big toe joints?
If they're painful, normally it's there's a couple of issues that can be associated with that. So you kind of get flare-ups when you get bunions. So it might be sore for, we say, the last 2 weeks, and then it goes away and then it comes back, we say, next week. So I always say it's a bit like a volcano and there's eruptions. So you get an eruption, it'll erupt, it'll go down, it'll erupt, and it'll go down and it'll blow. So this, all those little red flags, the eruptions, they're a sign that the joint is changing. So it's either changing angle or it's bone on bone. So if it's the actual bunion pain is bone on bone. So we've got 3-in-1 oil that lubricates all our joints, and a bunion is thickening of the bone. And when you get that severe dart for bone pain, it's one bone touching off the other bone or rubbing, and that's the bunion. So when it comes to solutions, we'd always look at what's causing the bunions first. Is it hereditary? Is it to do with job? Is it to do with weight? Did you damage? Is it on 1 foot, 2 feet? So we'd kind of build a picture. So when it comes to HAV, we'd look at, the midfoot also. So the midfoot, if somebody's got very, very flat feet, it speeds up the deviation of a bunion. So footwear is very important. So obviously wide-fitting shoes, like there's loads of brands out there, but wide-fitting shoes, and make sure that there isn't any redness there kind of in the evening time. But also like an appliance then to prop up the bone from behind, and that would be an orthotic just to help with the bone deviation. Surgery would be the last option. Patients always ask me that.
Trillie caller wants to know, are Crocs bad for your feet?
No.
They're a crime against fashion anyway, in my view.
They are. I think they're desperate. So no, they're part-time. So like Crocs should be used as a part-time, as in evening time when you're just doing very little mileage around the house for an hour or two, that's fine. But if you're flopping around all day, your feet are going to spread to the width of the Croc. So that's what happens. If you're flopping, you get loose, bones move, you'll bring on the flat feet, or you bring on bunions, or you bring on something.
A lady in her 50s says she has no fat on the soles of her feet and gets a lot of calluses and ingrown corns. What trainers would suit her best?
I'd say get the feet looked at first, and then trainers come second. If she's a lot of callus on her feet and if she's got corns, they're all a sign of pressure. She won't fix that. So that sounds like probably either an appliance or an orthotic or a simple insole or something to be built to alleviate the pressure of the corns, and then the shoe will come second. So lots of patients are always buying shoes and they think it's the shoes and it's not, it's them.
This is an interesting one. Listener says, can you tell whether a toenail has a fungus or if it's something like psoriasis? I'm currently treating it with Mycosan, but it's not improving. It's yellow in colour and the skin around it can get very hot.
Yeah, so if it's on one toe, we'll say, for the last 6, 9 months, 12 months, whatever, and it hasn't migrated to the second, third, fourth and fifth, then 9 times out of 10, the nail is damaged. So if you have a fungal infection, you've got fungal spores, and we'll say your shoe is like a combustion, so the fungal spores then will migrate and they love warm environments, and then the spores will spread onto the other toes. So if it just stays in one toe, whatever, for the last couple months or a year, then it's damaged or it's psoriatic or it's you might have dropped something on it, or you might have worn a pair of shoes that were too small. It's traumatised, so the enamel is traumatised. So if can anything be done for that? No. Once a nail is damaged, it's damaged. So you can get a nail sample taken by your GP, and you can get it sent off and to check, is there a fungal infection. If you're using anything kind of over the counter, or if you're using kind of whatever prescription tablets from your GP, like, I'm not really a fan of them because they do affect your liver, and you have to do liver function tests every 3 months and they're quite severe. But like, you know, the topical are quite good, but you have to build up an accumulation over the months. But like, sorry, a fungal nail has a kind of that yellowy look and you can kind of peel off the side and you get that kind of spore smell. Psoriatic then, how can I explain it? It looks more kind of like a glassy white, whereas fungal looks more yellow.
So it sounds like
you wouldn't
this
have it on
fungal,
one toe,
yeah.
You'd have it on elsewhere as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Just one more, Anne-Marie, because we're out of time already. A listener says, will you ask Anne-Marie if anything can be done with hammer toes? I can't wear nice shoes because my second toe is crossing over onto my big toe and it runs out of the shoes, causing it to get cut. At the same time, directly under that toe on the base of my foot, it feels like I'm walking on a stone and it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's a hammer toe. The problem there is that the second toe is overriding, so obviously the big toe has pushed it out of the way, so she probably has a bunion and a hammer toe, so it's not as simple as just the hammer toe. So if her toe is overriding, technically then she's only walking on 4 toes. Ideally you'd need the 5 for kind of good balance. So like, there's a couple of things. Normally what I would do is I would strap the second toe and I'd pull it back into place. Now, I wouldn't pull it back into place fully. I would kind of do it over a couple of weeks, so I'd get it tighter and tighter, and then we we'd give him an appliance, like a, it's a toe fix device, and we'd give him a kind of, it's like a little splint to keep the toe in place. But like that toe was always going to be lazy if it was left to deviate that much. Long term, you could look at the surgery aspect of that joint, so you could get the joint pinned. Now there is secondary factors to do with that as well, so if you get the joint pinned, then it can cause other problems with the other mesh tarsal heads. So I'd always try to kind of conservative options first. But if there's kind of callus and corns underneath, that's as a result of the toe overriding the bottom, gets a lot of pressure. But I would definitely, if it's getting caught in the shoe, that can be quite annoying, and the joint gets skinned. So I'd always look for kind of deep toe box shoes. And my philosophy, especially with feet like that, and this might be very professional advice, but the cheaper the shoe, the better, because the cheaper the material. So if you go for, like, we say an Echo 180, hard leather, it'll kill a hammer toe. So the softer the material, suede, nubuck, whatever, mesh, like even some of the Brooks there would have a high toe box, and they can take an overriding toe, but it's all to do with depth. So you have to have a depth in a shoe for an overriding digit, just to take the pressure off it. Also, we build silicone appliances. It's kind of like Mola. We hand make them, and we build a silicone appliance just around the joint, and we lift the shoe off the toe, and they're very good.
Okay, well, it sounds like there are plenty of solutions there. Anyway, hopefully something will work for our listener. Remind us again where people can contact you and make an appointment with you, Anne-Marie.
There's Killarney Clinic. It's across the road from the large Tesco's there on the Park Road. And truly, they're out in Carsley. And it's Killarney is 06466354 12, and truly is 06671908 2.
Okay, but if anyone missed that, they can just Google truly to diet. Clinic or Killarney Podiatry Clinic.
My Facebook now has been scammed, so there's no Facebook. I can't get into it. So the page is there anyway, but
okay.
I can't get into it.
Okay, loads of people being scammed at the moment.
Yeah.
Anne-Marie, thanks a million for that, and we'll chat to you next month.
Thanks a million.
All going well. 2:30, listeners, lots more to come on the programme. Coming up after the break, we'll be hearing about a very exciting news in Listowel. A much-loved community man in Listowel, who sadly is no longer with us, is going to be honoured in a very special way in his hometown. We'll have more on that after this break.